Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
I'm sorry, I'm Senator Joe Lieberman. I object to this podcast. I have some demands before we can go forward. For one thing, I want the podcast to be funny.
I'm sorry, Senator. I'm afraid that's a demand we're not prepared to meet. Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And Ken, this week we're all wondering, what is the sum of 60 minus 1?
59. I tell you, 7 years of high school is how I figured that out. But actually, 60, as you, Ron, have said in this podcast from the outset, 60 may be a magic number in some circles, but in reality, it's not a magic number.
Because it doesn't hold together. They don't really have 60 Democrats. They've got 58 nominal Democrats, which includes several who might as well be in the other party on many issues, including this one. And it also includes Bernie Sanders, who's been a problem in his own right this week, although he's on the other side of the spectrum, bringing up a single-payer health care bill and trying to put it forward as a 800-page amendment to the bill and calling it, let's just give everybody Medicare, as though the program were just for everyone, which is just a backdoor way of saying single-payer. That didn't work out so well when the Republicans insisted the amendment be read every single word into the record, which would have cost him a couple of days. And then on the other hand, you've got this other independent, Joe Lieberman. And, well, Ken, I'll just let you describe Joe Lieberman because I tend to get a little excited.
The question everybody has about Joe Lieberman is, what is he after? What does he want? He basically got what he wanted. He said from the outset that he wanted no public option. The Finance Committee came out with a bill that did not have the public option. Then Harry Reid said, no, I want the public option. Then the House passed it with a public option. And then Joe Lieberman said, look, you need 60. I'm one of those 60.
And you're not going to get me.
You're not going to get me if you have a public option.
So, and people knew that Joe was not kidding, that he would stand there on the floor of the Senate and filibuster with the Republicans to stop the entire health care bill in order to keep the public option out, even if the public option took what form, Ken Rudin?
There was a Medicare buy-in program, which they tried to push through as a sop to the liberals, whereas you could be as young as 55 and buy into the program, which is something that the Al Gore, Joe Lieberman ticket campaigned on
in 2000.
And as recently as 3 months ago,
September.
Joe Lieberman, how do you finish my thoughts? That's why we're an amazing team.
I think it's incredible. I sometimes start your thoughts.
And so Joe Lieberman says, you want 60? You're not going to get me if you have the Medicare buy-in, if you get the public option. Harry Reid, who thought he had crafted this great compromise, suddenly says, well, we have to have it. And what's interesting to me is that
we have to have that 60th vote.
Well, yes,
he was willing to give up on the substance of the most important thing that they have come up with in recent weeks in trying to work this alchemy to make this bill happen. Probably the smartest thing anybody had come up with was the substitution of that 55-year-old buy-in into Medicare. And it was a Joe Lieberman idea as much as anyone else's. And who shoots it down?
Joe Lieberman. And what was striking to me is that the left could play hardball too, but they don't. Sherrod Brown, one of the leading progressives in the Senate, could have said, well, look, if you're no public option, no Medicare buy-in, I'll sit out. You'll have to woo me. It's interesting that the left has not done the kind of tactics, the hardball tactics.
Roland Burris says he will.
Roland Burris is actually on both sides of the issue. He actually amended what he last said, and he said, well, maybe I will vote for it, but I'll
Roland
hold my
Burris
nose
is looking
vote.
For an appointment to come out the other end of his Senate service at the end of 2010. He wants a job. He wants to be given an honorific title.
You know, maybe he can get Rod Blagojevich to appoint him to the U.S. Senate.
Oh, now that would be an idea.
Yeah.
You know, as a matter of fact, the SEIU, which is one of the most outspoken of the labor unions.
Bring your own bottle?
The SEIU is the Service Employees International Union.
Right.
Andy Stern is their very outspoken president. And they are urging Democratic senators to do exactly as you say, to dig in their heels. Sherrod Brown, any number of them, could Jay Rockefeller, people could say, I'm not going to be bamboozled by Joe Lieberman. We want something in exchange for giving up the public option. And if it can't be Joe Lieberman's own idea, whatever does he want and need, then we're going to say to him, we're hanging it on you. There's going to be no health care legislation, and it's your fault.
Sounds like a lot of Democratic lawmakers who just cringe at the thought of him having the power that so many other senators would love to have. Sherrod Brown has said over and over again, 58 of us want the public option. 58 of us want the Medicare buy-in.
And plus Bernie Sanders, the other independent, who will go with that because he can't get single payer, which he'd prefer.
And of course, this week we hear from Howard Dean again. He said this week what Republicans have been saying for a long time, let's start from the beginning, let's start from scratch, rip up the bill and start from one. Of course, when Republicans did it, everybody laughed. But now Howard Dean seems to be speaking for a lot of progressives, at least if you listen to read the lefty blogosphere out there, and said, look, this bill is fatally flawed. It's not what we agreed to. It's not what Harry Reid worked out on a compromise. It's become the Joe Lieberman bill, and this is not the way we should do it. We should start all over again. You know that's not going to happen. You know who will never let that happen? Barack Obama.
That's correct. And Barack Obama, I think, ultimately here has the wider and longer vision. Howard Dean is saying this because he's frustrated at having been essentially ignored in this entire discussion. He's a physician. He's been the chairman of the Democratic Party. He's been a presidential candidate. He's been a governor. He feels like he should have a seat at
he's
the table.
He's campaigned on this issue he when has, he ran for president in 2004.
But he does not have a seat at the table. Right. And his idea for going back to square one, there's a reason it agrees with the Republicans. The Republicans know that's death. That
right,
means there will be no health care legislation in this Congress. And in the next Congress, the 112th Congress, there will be fewer Democrats. That's just pendulum swing.
And
that's Newtonian physics. And the Republicans are exactly right to push for that. And Howard Dean is exactly wrong to think that that's a
and that's exactly
idea.
What President Obama wants this passed now. He knows that in 2011, there will be significantly fewer Democrats in the House.
There'll be fewer than 258 in the House. There'll be fewer than 60 in the Senate. You don't have to have 10% unemployment, you don't have to have the president under 50% approval for that to be the case in the midterm elections. It's going to be tough.
Okay, so now Joe Lieberman did get what he wanted. He got the public options out. He got the Medicare buy-in out. Now the tension turns to Ben Nelson of Nebraska, who has his own issues.
I'm ready for my close-up, Mr. DeMille.
Look, I don't think that whatever ego is involved with Joe Lieberman, I don't think that's with Ben Nelson. Ben Nelson, from the beginning, has been very strong on the issue of abortion. He feels that what passed in the House, the Stupak Amendment, should be in the Senate. Now, that was defeated in the Senate, but here we are thinking Joe Lieberman's on board, everybody's going to be happy now. Not at all. First of all, we may very well get a Senate bill passed by Christmas.
Or Christmas Day or the week after
the
23rd, or sometime
24th.
Before Congress normally would come back.
But then we still have
With the House.
A completely different bill in the House, which includes Stupak, which a lot of liberals detest. We have a Senate bill which may not include a Nelson Amendment or some kind of abortion language that Nelson and others may not vote for. So jumping up and down and heralding this passage may be premature.
I think that's right. But some juncture along here, I think we're going to start to see what I call the Oregon Trail effect. And that is that they will have gone so far that there's no one going back. They're absolutely committed to this politically. They're going to be hung for it, whether they go all the way to Oregon or they try to turn back and go all the way back to the Mississippi River. And they have to figure out some way to successfully complete this journey.
That's why the Howard Dean suggestion of this week was ludicrous from the outset.
One other name that a lot of Democrats are angry at, despite the fact that he has been leading the wagon train, and that's Harry Reid.
Well, has he been leading the wagon train? Ostensibly, his name is on the mantle plate there.
He is the manager of the bill.
He is, but a lot of times, he'll come out with negotiations or new ideas of the bill that even his own deputy, Dick Durbin of Illinois, says, I have no idea what's behind this secret plan. He has not been a persuasive leader. Obviously, he has one eye back in Nevada, which when he's up for re-election next year, and he has a tough fight against an unknown Republican right now. I mean, unknown because we don't even know who the Republican will be.
It isn't even a question of him versus
a
particular person.
Right.
It's just an up or down vote on Harry Reid in Nevada next year, and he knows it. And he knows that his commitment to this bill is costing him back home. So the last thing in the world he wants to do is fail to get a bill and be barbecued for what was in the bill at the same time back in his reelection campaign. But, you know, in defense of the man, and I have never been a huge admirer of Harry Reid's style of running the Senate, he has at least brought them to the brink. He has at least kept the thing alive. It could have died so many times in the Senate. It's not really his fault that Joe Lieberman can pull this kind of thing at the last minute, or Ben Nelson, or Bernie Sanders, or anyone else who is potentially in the position to bring them to grief.
And now that we've defined Harry Reid's role, I think we still should define President Obama's role. We've said from the beginning that he didn't want to micromanage it the way that Clintons did, but I think we're now at crunch time. This is crunch time, and whereas Obama could say, look, you know, you can have some differences, you can have some, but there's no way this bill will be torpedoed. This has to pass.
And, you know, the other thing is that it's going to make it very difficult for him to go off as scheduled for a Christmas holiday in Hawaii when there exists the possibility that the Senate will be literally debating the bill on the floor on Christmas Eve, on Christmas Day, they
yes,
can take the final vote.
But if he can go and recover his birth certificate, I think it'll be worth it. Of course, before the president goes to Hawaii for his vacation, he's going to Copenhagen for the final days of the summit.
The World Summit on Climate Change. Now, this is a pretty chilly climate, not only because the subject is global warming, but also because you've got hundreds, thousands of people out on the street loudly protesting. You've got world leaders contesting. You've got China being difficult with their position, the developing countries at odds with the developed countries. And there's probably not going to be a lot of trophies for this politically for the world leaders who are going. But he's going. He's going to be part of the picture. He's going to be part of the U.S. effort to get something out of this. One place the president won't be going over this particular Christmas week is home to Illinois.
The Illinois news of the week, of course, is that President Obama announced that about 100 or so detainees from Guantanamo will now be shipped to the maximum security prison in Thompson, Illinois. There is some division by party in Illinois about the wisdom of bringing these prisoners to Illinois. The governor, Pat Quinn, who is in a tough battle for not only re-election but renomination, he has a tough primary against Dan Hines, the state controller. Pat Quinn was told in advance by President Obama of the plans, and he's all for it.
He's all for it. And he and Dick Durbin, the other senator from Illinois, showed up with President Obama to announce that this deal had been struck. And that all sort of is a complete buy-in. They're getting behind this plan, and it could be a big political problem for them.
It could be. And, of course, you know, Pat Quinn is not the only governor with problems in 2010. Seems to be a huge list. If we go, you know, we're coming to the end of 2009, Ron. I want to wish you in advance a very happy Thanksgiving. But there are a lot of governors in 2009, both Republicans and Democrats, who've had not the best of years.
Well, some of them haven't even survived the year. John Corzine, of course, was defeated in his attempt for re-election. Sarah Palin chose to retire as governor of Alaska.
The aforementioned Rod Blagojevich.
There was Blagojevich, who was already in trouble when the year began, but who actually was impeached and removed from office and then indicted during 2009. We've also had a number of governors who, while they're still in office, have taken tremendous bruising in the course of 2009 and who are almost certainly politically done as a result. Mark Sanford.
Well, Mark Sanford, first of all, it looks like he may not lose his governorship. The House Judiciary Committee voted this week unanimously to rebuke the governor.
Which was good news for him. They rebuked him because they weren't going to impeach him.
They're not going to impeach him. He may have lost his wife, and that's what it looks like. She has filed for divorce.
And there were other governors as well who, while they survived the year, you know, are in a certain amount of political trouble. David Patterson in New York.
David Patterson may not survive a primary against Andrew Cuomo if Cuomo can ever decide. Now, Patterson's numbers have been moving up a little bit, but clearly the White House, the Democratic Party, wants a new nominee, and they don't want David Patterson in the ring.
Out in California, another big state, Arnold Schwarzenegger. We sat there in 2004 at the New York Republican Convention and watched him absolutely mesmerize that enormous audience and a national television audience. And today, he's as finished in the Republican Party as probably Mark Sanford.
Yeah, and I think the Republican Party is glad that he's leaving. Of course, they may not get a governor elected in 2010.
Well, they may. They're in the hunt in 2010. Yeah.
They are, but if you look at the way Arnold Schwarzenegger looked in 2003, 2004, when he was a brand new, fresh face, a new governor, first of all, California is so ungovernable. And what's striking to me about all these governors we're talking about, I think on paper, 2010 could very well be a Republican year in the House races, in the Senate races. But I think because of the economy, because of the problems that the states are having, neither party has an advantage
with
all the problems.
I think that's right, although in the Republicans' case, while they have to deal with the same economy the Democratic governors do, and it's a problem for both, there have been a number of other more personal and ideological struggles within some of these larger state Republican parties. So you've got Charlie Crist down in Florida, who at one time looked golden and is running now for the Senate.
Tough race against Marco Rubio.
Very tough race within his own party. And you also have Rick Perry in Texas, who served longer in that office than anyone in either party ever has, but has a real challenge from the state's sitting senator, Kay Bailey Hutchison, supposedly the most popular Republican in the state. And, you know, around the country, you've got other Republicans who have problems in the governorship of their own making to some degree or another. Jim Gibbons in Nevada with his divorce.
Impending divorce.
And then you have Bobby Jindal, who began 2009 as absolutely the hottest young property in the Republican Party on everybody's short list for 2012, gave the response to the president's speech to the nation right after his inauguration on national television, and sank almost entirely from sight.
Yes, but that situation reminds me a lot of what happened to Bill Clinton in 1988 when he gave the four-hour speech nominating Michael Dukakis.
Bill Clinton pressing on with his nominating speech, which has now been running for about 25 minutes altogether, and he's only about three-quarters of the way through. He has a restless crowd on his hands.
He was mocked. He was ridiculed.
For going on too long.
It was an awful, awful speech.
Not for looking a lot like a guy on 30 Rock.
Well, look, I think that was the American public's first look at Bill Clinton. He redeemed himself. I still think it's not too late for Bobby Jindal, but those bad feelings from his response to the president's address was pretty brutal.
Okay, Ken, a couple of quick items, just a little popcorn items here at the end. Big vote in the City Council of the District of Columbia changing a trend, or at least bucking a trend we've seen around the rest of the country.
Right. It's supported by an overwhelming margin to support same-sex marriage. If Congress does not reject it, because Congress still controls D.C. affairs, it will join five other jurisdictions to accept gay marriage, which is the opposite of what we've been seeing lately. It was defeated in the New York State Senate, withdrawn in New Jersey, defeated by the voters in Maine, defeated by the voters in California. So same-sex marriage will continue to be a hot-button item for 2010.
And on a related matter, in the runoff election in Houston, Texas, the mayor of Houston, Texas is now, for the first time, an out gay person.
Anise Parker was elected. She's a city controller. Now, of course, she did not run as a gay person. She ran as somebody who can solve Houston's problems. The opposition to Anise Parker tried to build an anti-gay backlash, which failed miserably. But again, another victory for gay rights activists.
And finally, as we always take note of senior members of the House who decide to end their careers voluntarily, Bart Gordon, longtime Democratic representative from the state of Tennessee, joining the ranks of Democrats heading for the exit.
Right. Longtime incumbent, but first-time caller. He's the fourth Democrat in the last couple of weeks to announce his retirement. If that number gets larger, it's something for the Democrats to worry about.
Double digits, it's a big problem.
I agree, but right now it's just four. It's Bart Gordon, John Tanner, Brian Baird of Washington, and Dennis Moore of Kansas.
That's it. And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
Or not. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR and our gala final podcast of 2009.
Melikilikimaka is a thing to say on a bright Hawaiian Christmas day. That's the island greeting that we send to you from the land where palm trees sway. Here we know that Christmas will be green and bright.